week's special episode, I'm joined by fellow Irishman and one-fifth of the biggest boy band of all time, One Direction's Niall Horan. Now, since his One Direction days, Niall has enjoyed a stellar solo career, having just released his latest album, Heartbreak Weather. As a recent podcast evangelist, Niall invited us to his apartment in London a few weeks ago to chat everything podcasts over a cuppa, as well as how he had been balancing his time between songwriting and tour life. From the dulcet tones of Peter Crouch in the Peter Crouch podcast to George Ezra and friends, let's get cast away with Niall Horan.
Niall Horan, welcome to Cast Away.
Hello, Laura Whitmore.
How are you?
Long time no see.
I know. I think, when did I last see you?
Jesus.
Glastonbury?
How long have you got? Yeah, Glastonbury. Yeah.
That was fun.
Oh my God.
And I was trying to remember.
You're usually drunk anyway.
Wait, we can tea now. Tea and water, very sensible.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to remember back the first time that we met.
So was I.
And I think it was, when did you audition for X Factor? Like 2010?
10.
10 years ago. Mm. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Right.
And I remember, I think I was on MTV and I remember all the One Direction lads yeah. coming in. And normally we have a studio inside, but for some reason, because it was sunny, we had bought a studio outside on the
that's
canal.
Right, it was in Camden or something.
It was in Camden, yeah,
right,
yeah, and you all came in. And that was the first time I met you, but I didn't really know you.
Nah, but we were just doing the whole, oh, you're Irish, yeah. I'm Irish, we both work in entertainment, let's hug each other.
It is weird, though. There was I kind of, because I moved over and didn't know anybody, and I think if I found anyone Irish immediately... Yeah. I just felt, someone who kind of gets it.
100%, because I was, same with me, because I was kind of surrounded by loads of English at the time, moving to England 16, just like a deer in the headlights, and then bumping into yourself and Brezzy and Noel McDermott and Greg and James and all that, and all of our little, as we call ourselves, the LIC. That was huge, I suppose, wasn't it?
And you just need that. And I'll kind of go back and, I suppose you haven't really stopped since then, and I heard you saying this in a podcast when you're on George Ezra's podcast, George Ezra and Friends. We'll talk about that a bit later on. But you went to this audition and then you never really came home.
No.
That was it.
Yeah, I think that was like a one kind of thing that all of the parents of the lads kind of said, you know, it was kind of, they all had that in common that we were 16-year-olds kind of living at home, going to secondary school, coming home in the evening, doing your homework, getting up the next day, doing the same. We all come from like really small villages and towns. And then literally went from that to next day living in London. And my father always says, pack the suitcase, never came back, basically. And that was it, 10 years later.
The roller coaster still goes.
It's nuts.
Still going.
When you think about it like that, it's crazy.
And I remember when I first started MTV, when I used to do interviews, you basically had about 10 minutes with somebody and then it was cut into a news bulletin. So no matter what you'd say, you'd be like one little soundbite
that you'd use.
And I remember when I started doing this podcast last year, I was like, oh, I can sit with somebody and actually have
a chat. Yeah, I know.
And it's weird because it's so different to what I know, but I love it because you can kind of get context.
Well, I mean, I think that's why podcasts have become such a thing.
Yeah.
Because people like the short stuff in terms of news bulletins and things, as you say, but they also like to hear the other side of a story and sit down.
See personality.
And actually get into someone's personality. Mm-hmm. I'm generally quite boring, so this should be good crack. By the way, I loved the way you said, yeah, I know. Cheers, thanks.
Yeah, I've known you for years.
Really boring.
Now we'll be friends with you if you're boring. But I think, and again, going back to that Irish thing, because that's what we have in common, this nature of storytelling, I've always loved storytelling, and that's probably why I got into journalism, and I used to love acting when I was younger, because I liked these stories. And I'm assuming as a songwriter, that's probably a huge thing for you as well, the storytelling element.
100%. As you say, being Irish, it becomes, you know, we were talking about this before, you know, like it comes with, tell us an old yarn.
Yeah.
And, you know, all your granddad going over to the house, your granny telling you stories from years back.
Yeah.
You probably didn't even believe were true, but you like the story element of it and learning something about ages and ages ago. And just, there's just something about being Irish and being able to tell a story. We all have this knack of being able to tell a good story. In terms of the songwriting stuff, I mean, that's part of it. You know, I grew up on artists, and I hear a lot of Irish artists, people like Damien Rice, you know, and things like that, where that's what their music is about literally nearly speaking down the microphone.
Did you find it weird when you first like moved? I know you kind of lived between LA and London and different places, but I remember when I first moved to London and you'd have a night out and then... In Ireland, you'd go back to someone's house and have a sing-song. And there's always a guitar in the house. Yeah. And when I moved to London, people didn't do that. And I was like, whose house are we going back to for a sing-song and for the chats?
Oh, stop.
And didn't happen.
Well, it only happened when we got together. But I even now, like, I remember when I first started living in LA and Robbie Keane had just started playing for LA Galaxy, and we bumped into each other, became good mates straight away, just the Irish thing again. And he was like allergic to like going to the pub or going to a bar or something. He was like, can we not go up to the house and have a sing song? And we'd end up going up to the house and just like going through a lot of Irish tunes and singing till the early hours. But yeah, it's not really so much of a thing over here. But I do miss those days. We'll have to bring them back.
And you just stay up all night chatting, kind of righting all the wrongs in the world. The next morning you're like, I feel like I had an epiphany, but I've forgotten what it was.
Yeah, we solved all of the world's problems last night.
All the problems. I want to talk about, actually, because I was looking, you haven't done a lot of podcasts, but I'm a huge fan of George Ezra and Friends. Yeah. And I found it really interesting why George started doing that, because he was a fan of podcasts anyway, but he found it as a singer-songwriter was really helpful for him to talk to other singer-songwriters about their journey. Yeah. And I listened to your one, and it was really interesting because I heard you talking about things. I've interviewed you before, I've seen your interviews before, and you talking about things that you've never talked about. Yeah. And even at one point, George asks you your advice because he's about to do this O2 arena and all these different bigger gigs, and he's asking your advice. And was it nice to kind of be interviewed by someone who is, I suppose, one of your peers?
I absolutely loved that podcast. It was literally sat in this exact spot.
You have to come to your house to pin you down. I've realised that.
Yeah, honestly. If you want to do a podcast, they all happen at my kitchen table.
You get tea, though, so that's good. It's great. It does serve tea.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved that podcast anyway. I nearly kind of half put myself forward for it because I knew he was on the search for people to do it, you know? I just loved the personal side you get. Like, I mean, you sit down with Elton John and like all these unbelievable artists, and hearing a side of Elton that you would never hear, just because, you know, he keeps his life quite closed, rightly so. Same with Ed. And just have like a really, like, we literally just stuck microphones on our shirts and we just sat for an hour and a half and just chatted. Like, we don't get to do it a lot, really, but sit down with another artist and actually talk about how you write a song or, you know, your feelings towards fame and just general chit-chat that you don't really get to have with other people because you don't do the same job. Mm-hmm. Sitting down and actually having like a chat about music and things like that I just loved it, and I'm a huge fan of that podcast anyway.
And you must spend a lot of your time, especially now, because, you know, we'll talk about the second album coming out this month. It'll probably be out by the time this comes out. But doing a lot of promo, doing a lot of interviews, which are kind of the same, have to be the same, I suppose, because you're talking about different songs. But to have the environment, being in your house, having a chat where you don't feel as guarded, because you've probably learned over years to be a bit guarded in interviews.
Yeah. I remember talking to someone about it before, and I always like to say, I'm being myself in interviews. Mm. Like, to an extent, I am. But you'd never really actually fully give yourself away at all, do you?
No, because your words get twisted, or you'll say something and they'll take it out of context.
But even if you knew full sure that that it was never going to get twisted, you'd probably still have a little guard up, you know, and kind of, I like to call it, like, red light syndrome. You see the red light come on and you just turn into a different person in a way. Yeah. Like, a bit less so now, because I know you for 10 years, but like, there is something that you'll always have a guard up against it. But the questions, I mean, I always remember a good interview. Like, even I did a day of promo last week, and I can remember this one standout interview I did, because it was based on, it was actually someone genuinely asking me about my music and wanting to know about my life, like, maybe not wanting to know about my life, but definitely gave me that idea.
They pretended they wanted to know.
But I could tell it was never just going to be like a flash in the pan type story. It wasn't like a quick, the same, like, I mean, I could retweet 100 articles right now that were written in the last couple of weeks about me. They probably have the same answers, just because you're asked the same questions and you literally just have like bullet points that you hit. And you're subconsciously doing it.
Do you ever forget in an interview, especially if you've done a junket or back to back, that you're like, have I answered this question already? Am I repeating myself? Like, do you ever just kind of lose an interview where you're nearly on autopilot?
Oh, 100%. I've done it. Like, I've done junkets for movies, junkets for albums, junkets for all sorts. And it's just like, you nearly turn into a little bit of a robot, but... I try and consciously think, try and at least give, if you're going to say the same thing, like, at least give it a different angle.
Yeah.
Because you can easily run away with it and just turn it into a lot of blah, 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 but whatever.
We talk about that roller coaster at the start that has been nonstop. And it was interesting listening to Lewis Capaldi did George Ezra's podcast, because both of them kind of got into it a bit different. You're kind of all on the same level now, but you're... you got into it differently. You kind of were thrown into it, and you were doing stadiums before you even did the smaller venues. Like, yeah, it's mad when you kind of look back at it.
I do not deserve to have a number one for 7 weeks. No one deserves to have a number one. No one deserves fuck all, I don't think. But, like, no one deserves that. No one should have that. It's like an anomaly thing for me. Like, that will never happen again in my career. I can tell you that right now. And it was like that thing of the bigger it got, the more I felt like, oh, fuck, this is, I mean, not that, this isn't like, I'm not, I shouldn't be doing, like, I mean, it was like this thing, and you go in and people are like, so how, like, you know, how is it, how do you write a hit? And you're like, fuck, what is it? I don't fucking know. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and you just, it was so, it's so surreal. And I get it, like, even when I see backstage at festivals, and you fucking see, I don't know, you're next door to, like, Nile Rodgers and fucking, like, I don't know, fucking, like, people like yourself and people like, I don't know, Jess Glenn, the Cooks, fucking Arctic Monkeys around the corner, and you're just like, why the fuck am
the
I
the thing
here?
Is, with someone like Nile Rodgers, is if you said, how do you write a hit, he'd be like, oh, it's simple, man.
But it's like, it's just one of those things, like, I just, even just being in that environment, I kind of like, I show up and I'm not showered, fucking disgusting, and I look around and everyone looks great, and they're all fucking just, like, they're just like, it just feels to me in that environment like, I do it like a kid at his first day of school. Every time we go to festivals, I feel like it.
But it's so, it's weird because that, for me, has gone. Ooh. But it kind of almost happened overnight in the, and I miss it. Yeah. I miss the, not that I'm like, I don't walk onto a festival site like, here I am, here I am.
Well, I don't know, I saw you transmitting.
I'm bowling about.
Security guards or that.
There was one thing which you said, and it was, you have to have life experiences to write about stuff. And I suppose with One Direction, you were kind of doing album, 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 album. There wasn't much gap in between. Where were the life experiences?
Just kind of like relationship stuff in between. You were gathering it, you know, in the gaps that we were, I was around here or whatever. You know, and you were just kind of picking bits and pieces. The real stuff I've noticed since I've like gone out on my own is, and I've given myself time to write albums. I found that since going out on my own, I can be a bit more, you know, I've been through relationships and gone out the back, the other side of them, and kind of taken my stories from there.
With storytelling, and, you know, I suppose you can only write about what you know and what you see. Are you ever wary writing about something that's personal? Because as soon as something goes out, people are like, is that about that person? Is that about this?
Yeah, you do. To be fair, you do sometimes in songwriting. Like, I found I've just, like, stopped myself and said, can I say that? Should I say that? Will they care if I say that? But then you're just like, to be honest, it's fine. I can deal with, like, I can tell that person if it's about them or whatever and explain why. Whereas the press, like, story and the social media look on it is basically just a 5-minute, like, who's that song about? I want to be nosy, that kind of thing. When really, what I've taken away from it, and didn't really think about it until I went on tour in 2018, like, you know, I'd stand on stage every night and I'd sing some of my ballads or whatever, and I'd look down at the crowd and there would be people literally, like, just standing there crying. And what I was taking from that was, they don't want to know who that song's about. They don't care who that song's about. They've actually delved into it and brought it, related it to something in their life, and not the flash in the pan story that they were asked, you know, the question that they were asking 6 months previous. They've actually delved into it now. And if I get asked about it, I just say, listen, I say it basically that. You try and make it about something in your life. Don't ask about me. Like, my way of getting over something like that is to sit down at that piano over there, pick up one of those guitars and write about that. Once that song's written, it's kind of moving on for me.
I remember interviewing Ed Sheeran about this. He said the same thing. He said, once you write the song and put it out there, it's not your song anymore.
That's the way I like to think of it too.
And it's, that song could end up being played at someone's wedding, or, and it might be a song that you don't, it's a relationship that doesn't exist anymore for you, but for someone else it's a new relationship, so you still should play that song, or you should still, you know, have interest in that song.
100%. I mean, as you say, it might get played at someone's wedding, you know, people have their songs. This is our song. It's not like, it's not because it's about Ed Sheeran's missus or whatever. It's about because they've connected to it in their way. I used to care a little bit more about it. I think the older I've got, the less I care about what people actually think on like on that stuff. I'm more worried about what they connect to it emotionally and stuff like that.
I think it was the Lewis Capaldi one, but George Ezra was saying he was like having a fight with his girlfriend or something, and in his back of his head, he was like, oh, this could be good for a song.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said that sometimes he feels like he's harvesting his life for tunes. And he's like, "Is that? Do you do that? And yes. You kind of have to stop yourself? Go, oh, I could use this.
Sometimes, like, even like if I'm out and about and I see something, I'll write it down.
Yeah.
Just like, or if there was an argument or something, you know, you'd have, you'd, oh, yeah, yeah, I get what he's saying. Like, it's like when you think of something generally. I could be sitting here now and then, like, think of something and I'll just quickly write it down in my notes and then I'll forget about it and come back to it later. It's a similar thing, but... Yeah. As he says, you're harvesting your own life.
Yeah, right.
Especially if you're having an argument or something like that, or there's something going on. But I mean, all the good stuff you write down, yeah. And I mean, the bad stuff has to be written down too. But yeah, I get what he's saying.
I remember because Ian, my other half, is a stand-up, and I was like, "Do not talk about me and stuff. Like, I just do not."
Oh,
like,
that'd be brilliant.
But I remember we were away last year in Miami, and we're coming out of the hotel. We got an Uber, and Ian opened the door, and I got in, and he closed the door, and the Uber driver drove off. They thought Ian was working there, and he was like mortified. And then he's like, "No!" And had to like bang the car and get back
Please
in.
Tell me told that
but story. Then he was like, "Do you know what? Great stand-up." Because yeah, I'm like, brilliant. It's really embarrassing at the time, but it's great stand-up. Welcome to my life.
Well, at least it wasn't the other way around.
Yeah, I know.
You were left standing there and you wrote that story. That'd be worse.
Yeah, I don't know. How could I talk about it?
God.
Do you talk... I can't talk a little bit about George's show, but just moving on from that. Do you talk a lot to other artists? I know you're really good friends with Lewis Capaldi and stuff. Like, do you kind of share your experiences? Is it nice having people... Like, what I love about you is the friends that you were friends with when I first met you, you're still friends with. You kind of have that group of people, good people around you who... aren't necessarily in this industry, but is it important to have those people who kind of you can talk about what it's like when you're, you know, when you're out? And actually, Peter Crouch talked about this on his podcast.
Yeah, it's 100%. It's so important.
Yeah,
to have good people around you, you can just talk about normal stuff, and instead of it all being the industry things. My relationship with like Lewis and stuff, we have an unbelievable laugh, and I think everyone sees that. And I mean, you can only imagine the crack that we have. But at the same time, like, me and Lewis will have, you know, heart-to-hearts about stuff, and, like, you know, him asking me advice, me asking him advice and stuff like that. And it's not always like, ha, 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 do you want to go for a pint type stuff? But it's definitely important. I'm not friends with a load of artists. I think there's a lot of egos in music, like, in terms of, like, that subconscious ones where, like, I don't think people realise they're being quite standoffish. But, I mean, that's each to their own, and that's the way people deal with things. But... the ones that you really appreciate, the ones then that you do sit down with and chat to, like Lewis, or I'm good friends with Shawn Mendes or whatever, but they would literally be, you know, one of very few that I would call a really good mate in the industry. Apart from that, all of my mates are just like lads from home, my cousins, you know, yourselves and the little crew that we have. And it's so important. Like, we've got mates that are from all different walks of life. And I find it, I just love that. And I kind of... wish I didn't move south of the river now.
Yeah, I know. It took me a while to get here today. You should have stayed north.
I know, I'll come back at some point. But yeah, just kind of, you have to have it around you. A lot of people don't. And I realise how lucky I am to have, you know, a core group of mates that you can just text about normal stuff and trying to meet up and, you know, go for a roast or whatever. You know, we're lucky like that.
Was that a conscious decision, or did it kind of happen that way? Have you seen, because I've interviewed people, say 10 years ago, and then I've interviewed them recently, and some people you can see a change and some people you don't see the change. But I always wonder, is that a conscious decision on your part going, I can see the bullshit kind of creeping in, I need to check myself?
Yeah, if I can see, it doesn't happen to me a lot, but if it does happen, like the odd time, I'll be like, come on Horn, sort yourself out. But it doesn't happen. I'm lucky that, like, there's definitely an Irishness to being able to figure out the bullshit and know who's...
You get put back in your place if you go too far.
Yeah, if you'd say something or do something wrong, you'll know about it straight away, which is a great thing to have, because, as we say, not a lot of people have that. And yeah, don't overthink it, because if you're overthinking everything, then you're, you know, you're worried about who every time something's around. You kind of need... There's levels to it. You have to be... You can't just keep pushing people away either, but you always know who's good and who's not.
Every time I see you, and I'm sure it's not like this all the time, but you look like you're still having fun. And you said it before as well, that you always look like, out of all of the guys in One Direction, that you were just like, isn't it great just to be here?
Do you know?
But I feel like I'm that as well. Like, sometimes I look around going, this is mad.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
No, if you lose that, there's something wrong with you, because you're just not enjoying it anymore. I absolutely love it. I mean, it's probably everything I thought was going to be and better. I mean, if you get bored doing what I do, I don't know. Like, unless something's happened to you that's a catalyst that's changed you negatively, then I can't see why. I just love it.
Yeah.
10 years. I mean, it's crazy when we say it. Like, I was talking about someone the other day, and even just the fact that we were just saying there now that we've known each other 10 years, nuts.
But if you look, see what's happened in those 10 years, that's also nuts. Like, what you've done, people couldn't do in 50 years.
It's madness. But I'm lucky that it's still going, and I'll keep, like, the bigger it's gotten, the more driven I found myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't lie down for no one.
Do you remember the first time that you knew you could sing?
Yeah.
Because we all like to sing along to things, but when the first time you go, oh, actually, I'm all right.
I just felt like I kept getting picked for every choir in the school. Like, even at like a really young age, like doing solos in Away in a Manger at Christmas, couldn't wait. My teacher called Anne Caulfield, she was like my teacher in, like, she was a third class teacher, so I had her for third class, but she also ran the choir, and she was kind of like put me in everything. Mm-hmm. And then I was always kind of singing. I didn't really know, probably her telling me that I could sing was me knowing that I could sing properly. I was always mad into it. Like, there's pictures of me, like, microphones and guitars and showing off in the sitting room and all that stuff. But probably her that got me into it, yeah.
As crazy as your life is, I always think it must be really crazy for the people around you as well, because it's your choice to kind of go in for it, and it's not their choice to have this really famous son.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, any kind of stories? I always remember when there's an award show in Ireland called the IFTAs, which is like the Irish BAFTAs. Yeah. And I got put in like a holding room because I was going to present an award, and it was just me, and my mom came with me as my date. It was just me, my mom, and Pierce Brosnan. So I had to leave her in a room with Pierce Brosnan. And I was like, what the hell are they going to talk about? And then you come back and they're having a chat and you're like, I don't even want to know. Yeah. I'm just saying, what situations have you put your parents in?
Oh, loads of stuff. But like my dad's fine with it. My dad would, like, even now, like, I'd bring him to like a golf tournament and he'd say something, he'd go up to someone like a famous golfer and go, I was only watching you on the telly last week, you know, like, very, and I'm just like, oh God.
So they probably love it though.
I mean, they're probably just like, love his, and I've gotten to that, but I used to like find it quite embarrassing, and now I've just been like, listen, people are people, and that's just the way it is. Like, my mother loves going up to the Late Show in Dublin when I'm on
it,
or like my father's like, Jesus, Tubberty's a lovely fella, isn't he? Like, the host, or like, really.
It's crazy because for them, that's bigger than you doing a massive American show.
I know, because they don't, like.
Yeah, it's all relative, isn't it?
You know, I did Saturday Night Live before Christmas, but like, they wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas I was on
Scarlett Johansson, no. Ryan Tubberty is the man.
And they just like go into the green room and Ryan comes around and says hello, and then they're talking about it for 2 weeks, and it's like very. That's what I love about Ireland. It's so, like, everything is so simple. Like, it doesn't take a lot, you know, to make you happy.
It doesn't.
It was like my mother meeting Michael Bublé. She still doesn't get over it now. Like, she's a huge Bublé fan, like most people.
Yeah, who isn't?
And she went to meet Michael and introduce, and she's just like grabbing onto his face and like,
of
just.
Yeah. Like, don't touch him.
He's my friend.
I want to talk about another podcast that I know you listen to, which is Table Manners. And it's because Jessie Ware does it with her mom.
Yeah.
And I love it because she asks questions that I would never ask when I'm interviewing someone because you're told not to. And she actually, they've done a few, and there's one I remember, she did Liam Payne. And it was, she asked them all the questions. And I think in the first 30 seconds, she was like, I saw you naked. Let's talk about Cheryl. Like, literally said everything. But because it was Jessie's mom, she kind of gets away with it.
Yeah.
And there's something lovely in that storytelling of mothers just get away with other things.
100%. Jewish mothers, Italian mothers, Irish mothers. It's like a thing.
Yeah, there is.
And they all have that in common. And yeah, I like, speaking of Jessie's mum, I love that.
Yeah.
Like, if you meet Jessie, you've got a fair idea what her mum's going to be like. And her mum is just, I think they argue, you can hear them arguing on it all the time.
Because they're
basically the exact
same
people. And I love how normal that podcast is. It's one that I still have to do, actually. I would love to sit down with Jessie and her mum.
And you get fed as well. They cook for you.
Oh, brilliant.
What have we got today, mum?
We've got a sausage casserole.
Cool.
Made with ginger pig sausages.
Mm.
And some mashed potato, which you probably can't eat. We'll let you have a little bit.
Why can't you eat it?
He's trying to watch his weight.
We are. No. Mum, so are we, but we decided to do a food podcast, didn't we?
No.
No, it's not. It's not. I had a insurance thing for tour, and he just told me I had to drop a bit before tour.
That's terrible.
No, it dates back to when I broke both my arms. I think there's a lot of stipulations now in insurance. And
They're better.
That's not because you drunk bottles of wine.
Well, yeah, but I think he's like, for your heart, you have to like calm down on the wine and the fried food.
Do you like fried food?
I love fried food, yeah. I eat a lot of fried food.
Why? Actually, what do you eat a lot of?
Do you know what? I have a night where I'll get a baked camembert and bread, and that'll be the starter. And then the main, my friend Dan makes this thing called Tornadoes Rossini, which is
gorgeous.
What is that? Wagyu steak, Wagyu fillet. And they put duck liver pate on it and truffle, and then like gravy.
Divine.
And then you have dauphinoise potatoes, basically. And then you drink
as
much wine as you can.
Fabulous.
And how's it going for you?
Well, then I went to the doctor's and he was like, you can't do that. Stop doing that.
Again, another way of like normalizing. If you bring someone around, sit around the table, have a chat, and you're eating while you're talking, and it's a bit of a laugh. And yeah, if I had time, I'd love to do like pints with Niall, and we'd just go drinking Guinness in different pubs. Have a chat.
If you did a podcast, that would be a pints with Niall.
Yeah, that'd probably be it.
Nonsense. It wouldn't last long because everyone just gets so drunk and like, do you remember to press record? With table manners, they do cook a meal during because Lenny's a chef extraordinaire. Yeah. I'm just wondering, are you a good cook? What's your go-to?
I've only recently got into cooking because I decided that if I was going to, I'm going to try and get in shape, and I was deciding like...
You're looking all right.
You know what I mean? There's nothing really to it. But I've just found that like to get in shape, I'm going to have to cook for myself. So I've started. But I wouldn't say I was unbelievable. I've got a fair idea of what I need to be doing. It's more, I found it like quite therapeutic when I've done it. It's the chopping idea and all that. Like I love doing that side of it. I think it's something that the older I get, I think I'll get into it more. I got into coffee when I was about 22. I get into red wine in the last couple of years.
You know, as you're getting older, olives next.
Yeah, I'll be, you know, red wine and cooking, that'll be my new thing. And people will be coming over for dinner parties and all sorts. But up for now, I think I'm all right. No, but I love the idea of going on table manners. I think it's a genius. And so it's not too far away from here, actually. And just having a chat with them. Because there's, like, anytime I'm with Jessie, I always have the best laugh. And the idea of sitting down with her and her mother and just shooting the shit and talking about food and stuff, which are two of my favourite things to do, talk shite and eat.
If you could eat anything, what would it be? What's your favourite meal?
God, I might. I love Japanese food.
Yeah. I was going to say a Woody's kebab because I remember in Camden.
They shut that place down, you know that?
They opened, there's another one near me. Because we can Uber Eats it, which is great God. Now. No, I'm at a stage of loving that.
I love sushi. I just love Pan-Asian food in general. I'm not very particular. I'm one of those people that, do you know what? Like when I was younger, it used to be just meat and veg and that's all we knew. Potatoes, literally the Irish meal that you think we have.
You just think, I remember like, my auntie putting vegetable on my cousin's plate. And she's like, I don't like Brussels sprouts. And she's like, just leave it on the plate for colour. And some carrots, because I don't like carrots. Just don't eat them, just for colour.
Just for colour. And yeah, like I hated all that stuff. And the more I've travelled, the more I've like opened my palate. And I'll absolutely eat anything now. So if I do that podcast, it'd be great.
On that podcast, I mean, they've had so many different people on it. When Liam from One Direction, he was asked, out of all of the One Direction boys, who had the worst table manners? He said you.
Why is that?
He said you're a lad. But I don't know if that's table manners. I don't know what that means.
I mean, it's a tough question.
Because you're not going to do well either way, but...
I mean, I don't know if any, unless you're like royal or something, do you really have the best type of manners? I'd say I was all right.
What annoys you?
He's like probably talking about flatulence or something, which would be ignorant and wrong.
If you go for dinner with someone, and I went out with my, I'm not going to say who it is actually, I'm going to keep it broad, but it was a group of people, and they insisted on like, they're like, oh no, I'll order for everybody, and I don't like when people order for me.
No.
And then, food off my plate.
No.
How do you feel about stuff like that?
No. My mate, is the worst for it. I hate restaurants where you have to share. I don't like
tapas
gone, see you later. Not a chance. I hate, like, I am literally, Joy doesn't share food.
Yeah.
And I hate the idea of having to, like, you get, like, an ordering of prawns and you have to eat, you only get one prawn or something like that and, like, a piece of broccoli.
Yeah.
No, I'm all right, thanks. But, I'm not into that at all.
The one thing I love about talking about storytelling is how you can kind of, I have my best conversation sometimes when I'm driving a car, you know, when you're not looking someone in the eye.
100%.
Also when you're cooking food, like with table manners, when you're kind of having a chat, when you're doing something else.
Yeah.
If I have to have a big conversation with someone, I find it really hard just to sit down.
Yeah, no, it's, you need to have...
Distraction.
Isn't that weird though?
It's weird, isn't it? I know you should be focused, but it just takes all the pressure off if it's something... Not something serious, but I with table manners, I remember like listening to a few different ones. And like I said, about everyone, I think it was like Ed Sheeran on once. And he was talking so much more, even about like his wife and things like that, because he was just doing something else, like eating and doing. And I just feel, I don't know, maybe it takes the pressure. I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose if you have distraction and it's not the only thing you're thinking about, you have something to like
Palm
it off to. I mean, when you think about like the things you do with your mates, if you go for a drink, you've got that, and it's like,
yeah, I suppose it has. Do you know what? With like my male friends, I always feel if they go for a pint, it means deep chat.
100%.
They're not just going to come to the house and have a chat.
No, I'm not coming around. Like, just yeah, you come around to watch telly or talk a little bit of shit. But when you go, if you go for a pint or something, you can really delve into it. Yeah, when you're eating and stuff like that, I don't know. Like last night, a few of the lads came around. We watched the football, and you're kind of like, we were sitting right here, drinking tea, and watching the game on the telly, and you're kind of half chatting, half, but you're probably talking about deeper stuff than you usually would.
Yeah.
Like one of the lads was saying that he's been chatting to this girl, and then like, you know, like having chats about life through a football game, really, and you don't realise you're doing it. So yeah. I know what you mean, and yeah, you definitely do need a distraction, which is strange, really. But you always like, what I love about like chatting and stuff, you always learn something about someone else, and you learn a lot about yourself. Like if you have a heart-to-heart with someone and you're chatting away to them, you've learned something from their story that you could probably bring into your life. That's why I kind of, when I was writing this album that's just about to come out, I was trying to like not just write very selfish songs, because I went through a breakup and started writing this album, and it's very easy to just go, I'm so sad, look at me looking out this window,
yeah,
you know, it's pissing rain,
great lyrics there, yeah. You know, Ivor Novello.
But you know what I mean, like, I'm so sad, yeah. Look, you know,
but that's how you feel in that moment,
there's definitely more, there's less selfish sides to songwriting, because you end up like sitting there and going, I am this, I am that, this is all about me, you know, and you're playing away and you don't realize you're doing it. So I consciously made a decision that I was going to like look at, you know, what you learn from a story and bring it in, you know, write songs from a different angle. And that's what's made this album a little bit more interesting for me in terms of the writing side of it, because I've seen different sides to different stories that maybe a few years ago I wouldn't have, because I find the younger you are, probably the more selfish you are. And I found like even in the last kind of like sort of year or 18 months, I figured out a lot more about myself and become like a little bit less selfish, and you're kind of subconsciously selfish. It's not like I'm going out of the way to go, I am so selfish, but you're kind of doing,
you've lived more and you've met more people and you've seen more, and people around you you've seen go through shit. And
but sometimes you'd be having a conversation with someone, and like when I was younger, like probably in hindsight, and you're listening to it, but you're not really taking anything out of it in ways, like for yourself or for them, you know, you don't really have an answer for them, because you know, you're selfish and you don't really care.
Yeah, because I love you honestly. You just don't care. Yeah. I don't get anything out of it because I just don't care about this conversation.
But I definitely found that the older that I've got, the more I've taken out of just like proper chats that I've had with people, and just probably just more emotionally stable. And
just getting older as well. That's one of the good things about getting older, isn't it?
more wise.
So yeah, if no one has listened to Table Manners, it's brilliant. Jessie's so great, but just her mom as well, just for Lenny, like it's just the moms, you gotta love a bit of mammies.
It's brilliant. And again, it's kind of like the George Ezra thing, where it brings like the more personal side out of you know, celebrities in inverted commas. You know, they just come around to have a bit of food. I remember listening to Alan Carr's one, and you can actually hear the doorbell ringing, and like him coming in, he's got a bottle of wine and they're asking what the bottle was, and like, how are you, good to see you, and then they sit down and it's already ready to go, which is perfect.
You kind of feel like you're there at the table as well. Speaking of, another one that I know, podcast that you like, is the Peter Crouch podcast. And again, I feel like, because I remember when I first started listening to it, and I was listening to it because of doing this show, and someone was talking about it, and you know, it's a guide to being a pro footballer. I'm like, well, I don't really need that in my life. I don't really need a guide to being a pro footballer. But I've kind of met Peter in passing through like work stuff and like with Abby and things. And then I remember once like listening to it, I'm like, he's so funny.
He's brilliant.
He's so funny.
And to be fair, he's really good, and he's got Chris Stark there, who goes to
Chris,
like,
and
who's
then Tom's
also
there
great.
As well,
yeah, exactly. And they do that on a daily basis anyway. Chris obviously on the radio with Scott Mills and stuff. But I think everyone knew how funny Crouchy was. Like, I think as a football fan, everyone was like, Crouchy's a legend. You know, like the fact that he's got his own well known celebration doing the robot and stuff, and you know, he's got a bit of attitude about him. But he's another fella that's just unbelievable at telling a story. And I was actually saying this before me and you spoke about doing this week. I was talking to someone about it. I was like, how does he have the ability? to think up of all of these stories. But if you spend that much time in football dressing rooms for years and years, like he's been in a football dressing room since he's about 10 or 11, and the players that he played with and the whole way through his life, these are the stories that people want to hear. And that's why it's like one of the more successful podcasts, because dressing room banter for lads is like, you know, I listen to a lot of, listen to Talk Sport Radio, and it's the same kind of thing. It's just ex-footballers coming in and having a chat and telling you stories. And I think Peter also has a really good balance. He's been a huge ambassador for like mental health with Prince William and some of the other footballers, Danny Rose and things, that have had like mental health problems. So it's not always like laughs, 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 but he does have an ability to really keep you engaged. I don't know whether it's voice or...
As successful as he is, you kind of feel like he's your mate as well. Yeah. Like he has that, like you have that as well. It's that even though, you know, people put you on a pedestal, when people see you, they probably feel like they know you really well.
That's the thing. I think that's what, like, say Lewis Capaldi has or whatever. Yeah. It's kind of like, you have it as well. It's like people realise that you're just a normal fella that just like, or a normal person that does like an abnormal job. That's what I've always thought about myself. Like, society has decided that this word celebrity makes us a higher...
Yeah.
Like, puts us in a hierarchy. We didn't decide that.
Yeah.
Like, I literally just, like, think that I'm the most normal fella in the world. And then I go out and I'm like, well, maybe not. You know, like, it's kind of like other people have decided for me that I'm not. So I've always, like, consciously thought about that. It's probably one of the only conscious things that I, like, go out of the way to say, right, yeah. But when people do come up to you, they do feel like they can just chat in. They've known you for years, which sometimes can be a good and a bad thing.
I remember once, and like I wouldn't get it to like what you guys get, but I remember someone took a picture of me asleep somewhere. I must have been like either on a tube or something, or you know. And then you're just like, it felt very invasive. Oh, it's kind of funny, but very. And I'm just wondering, what was your worst situation of that? Because I don't mind if people ask, but people sometimes don't ask.
I had a girl on a plane with me one time. She was sitting behind me, and I was kind of standing up, put my bag over my head. This young American girl, about my age at the time, she said to me, what college do you go to? I was just straight away, she's like, this is bullshit. Yeah. I was like, I don't go. She goes, oh, you look exactly like someone in my class. Good one. I landed.
Okay.
Turned on my phone.
Yeah.
Went on Twitter, just kind of waiting for the drawbridge to come out to the plane. And she'd posted a photo of me asleep. And you know, I was just lying there with my arms behind me.
Were you still on the plane? Was she still there on the plane when you saw us?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I didn't say anything because I would have kicked off. But I remember like just being like, Christ, this is different level.
What can you do? There's nothing you can do about
what
that.
What do I just say? Like,
yeah. What do you say?
What'd you do that for? Or,
yeah.
Like, it was just the fact that she'd like tried to do the whole, I'm going to pretend right now that I don't know you.
And the thing is, if she probably had asked you quietly for a picture, you would have done the picture. If, you know, I always think within, depending on if you're with family or not with family. But I also think it was really important for you to speak, to say that was uncomfortable. Because I remember when I first started in MTV, I remember like, this is the pap culture. But I remember getting out of a car and I just had this pap trying to put his camera up my skirt to take a picture of my skirt. And I remember seeing in the newspaper a picture of my skirt and being mortified. But that was the culture. And it's only now when we speak about it that I think people realise, oh, you're a person and that's not nice.
And the quicker that happens, the better. Because it's been going on for way too long. Especially for women, like, it's an absolute disgrace. Usually, like, if I'm getting papped, or like I get in LA, you get papped a lot more than I do in London. Like, so
is it different, the pap culture, the photographers? Do you feel, is there much of a difference?
Well, it depends on your level of fame. I mean, like, it feels like you see the Kardashians from a mile away, you know who it is, because there's about 50 of them around and they're quite aggressive and stuff. I go to the lads, I give them like 6 seconds of do-do-do-do-do. I just go, lads, have a great day, I'll see you later, and let them move on. But there's a different culture for women, apparently, where it's a little bit more, a lot more aggressive. And as you say, you've had scenarios like that, which is,
I know.
Where does common decency come in? And then their answer is, well, I've got a job to do.
Yeah. Well, because,
is your job to be like
paying
an absolute pervert?
Yeah. But I also think you need to speak about it, because now, this was an upskirting bill last year, that it was a campaign that now it's actually illegal for those pictures to be printed.
Good.
But it took so many years, and it only took speaking about it. Because sometimes I think that girl who took a picture of you on a plane at the time probably didn't even think about it, because to her, you are Niall Horan, the superstar.
Yeah, yeah.
She forgot that actually you're a person, that's your private time, that's your private space. And I think sometimes, even with podcasts, it's so nice to listen to people talk and be like, oh, you're just a human.
Yeah, I know.
Real feelings.
That's why, as I said at the start, these things are so great. They've really brought like a personable side to just your general flash in the pan interview like that we always do. And people really get to delve in and see that people are just celebrities, as I keep saying, in inverted commas, are just normal people and like to have chats and talk shit.
Exactly what we're just doing right now.
Exactly.
That's pretty much, we're pretty much up out of time now. But you did say if you were to do a podcast, this is it. Pints with Niall for in a pub, who would be your dream guest?
God. Laura Whitmore.
Hey. I don't like being asked questions, I prefer to ask them.
I studied journalism.
I did that. Someone was asking me a question once and then I just kept turning it back on them. What do you think? I can't help myself.
To be fair, do you know what we were talking when we were talking about earlier about like when the best conversations come from when you're doing something else? Mm-hmm. Like I was thinking about it. I was actually about to go on a date recently. Ooh. And I'm also trying to stay away from alcohol.
Oh.
So I was thinking, how do you chat to someone without going for a drink?
do you know what I mean?
Just like, oh, to go for dinner. I hate the idea of sitting across from dinner from a table from someone and like, you know, again.
Yeah. Or I remember going on the first date to the cinema. The worst date, because you don't talk to them and you're in a dark room.
And then at the end you go, that was all right, wasn't it? But I was thinking that as well. And like some of the best conversations I've ever had have been over like just a couple of pints. Like, remember, sounds like a name drop, it's not. But I, through my love of the Eagles, I've gotten to know Don Henley quite well, which is just, I don't even want to talk about because it gets me emotional and I'm starting to get goosebumps. But I absolutely love the man. He played a gig in London and I brought him to one of my favourite pubs in London for a pint of Guinness. It's this dingy place on Soho Square. And we just sat down. And
I know which one it is because we've been there. They do crisps.
They do Tate or King or something. And just sit there. Just like, as you say, the distraction of it. I did not for one second think to myself, geez, I'm chatting away to Don Henley. Like, me and a middle-aged man having a chat. Yeah. And sometimes like that, something so simple breaks down that barrier. Mm. I think it's like, I found myself getting like more starstruck with people when I'm in their world. So if I'm sitting there or if I go to a football match and then I go and meet a footballer in a dressing room afterwards, straight away, I'm like, geez, he was on the pitch there a minute ago. Mm-hmm. Like that, it's kind of got that little thing about it. Whereas if you like bring your favorite singer-songwriter of the lead singer of your favorite band of all time, the reason that you sing.
Yeah.
For a pint, it's straight away just
kind of
like...
I want to hear the recording of that conversation
we talked about everything.
Yeah.
From music to life to where, you know, how we started. It was just like a chat that I probably never thought I'd ever have, but it was it felt so normal because of what, you know, and that brings... Sorry, I went off on a tangent but the distraction thing.
Yeah. Something else going
on. Something else going on.
It does help in distraction is alcohol, but it can also be a pack of crisps. It doesn't have to be alcohol. Heartbreak Weather will be out by the time this comes out.
Okay.
What are you most proud of with this album? Am I proud of?
I think on the last album, it was hugely successful and I can't complain, but like in hindsight, I probably pigeonholed myself a touch to the point where every song I sat down to write was a ballad and... Mm-hmm. Kind of apart from like Slow Hands and stuff like that, but just I automatically would like start finger picking and then straight away I'm writing a certain type of song. This time, having toured for so long, I wanted to bring a different element into me as a musician and as an artist and kind of like show a bit more diversity instead of being your man that sings the ballads. So I just kind of consciously went into the studio and just tried to have as much fun as I could. Didn't stay in like LA or London and write just there. We went on like trips away, which made it straight away more fun, you know, some writers together having a bit of a laugh. And I think with the Heartbreak Weather I wrote down Heartbreak Weather as a concept early on.
What is the concept?
The idea that the weather relates, the weather side relates to the different emotions that you feel like I spoke about earlier. And it's not always sad all the time. There's different, and it just kind of helped me. The weather thing, it might not be the greatest title of all time, but it definitely stood out to me.
Relatable. I think everyone can relate to
it. Yeah. And it became a concept for me and sticking to that, something that I'd never done before, never actually written like a technically concept album. And it really, like between sticking to the concept and just having a bit more fun with it, because I do take it quite serious, but like there's two places where I'm really serious is probably in like a rehearsal room when we're like rehearsing for a tour, which I'm doing at the minute, or in when I'm writing. I just get like really properly into it. No one can talk to me. Same with like Lewis. Wrote with Lewis there a while ago and I was just expecting to be the best laugh of all time. Yeah. And I kept asking if it was all right because he was so serious about it. And I wasn't expecting it. I just was like, hey, look, is everything all right? He's like, no, I just take it really serious. You know what I mean?
you do a good Lewis.
And I just got really into it. But this time I just found myself having a bit more fun. And I think when you hear the music, you can hear that. There was obviously, with the weather thing, there was obviously some hard songs to write and like emotionally. Yeah, and things, but I'd be most proud of just having a bit more fun because I'm generally quite serious. I mean, that doesn't make sense to anyone because people only see me just messing around all the time.
But yeah.
When I write, I'm really serious. And just not taking myself as serious as I probably previously done and just having a bit of fun with it. And
pushing yourself.
Yeah, and I think I think this is the best stuff I've written because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a bit more fun with it. I was just picking up microphones, singing in melodies, writing verses. If it didn't work, scrap it. Whereas usually I'd try and dissect every word that I'd come up with and just, yeah, I just wanted to have a bit more fun.
How many songs did you write altogether? Oh, like that don't make the album?
I wrote about 50 odd.
My God.
And there's 14 on the main album. So it was just like, I was trying to whittle it down. I got to about 20 and then it was like deciding on what productions were better, what mixes were better. But
I suppose the weather thing probably helps as well, that you have a good mixture of stuff.
Yeah, like there was like, I've got Nice to Meet You was kind of like my egotistical sunny moment where it was like, ah.
Yeah.
And then there's like moments like a song called Still and Put a Little Love on Me where like they're like the hard ones to write and they're a bit stormier, if you like. And this was what was going on in my head.
Yeah.
Literally had a board.
That probably helps though because you can't have everything stormy.
No. That's why I would literally write it down, all the different weather patterns, and kind of like write different songs and titles underneath it. And that was what helped me, you know, stick the album together. But it was really good fun. And wrote songs in loads of different places with different people and wrote some songs of my own and just kind of had a bit more fun with it. Generally, I'm quite weird about it.
Congratulations on the second album. Thank you very much for speaking to me.
Thanks for having me.
Looking forward to when you bring out your podcast. Go for a drink. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And that's it. Another episode down as we delve deep into my guest's audio world. I hope you get cast away by today's top podcast picks. Yeah, I just said that, sorry. All of the podcasts we've mentioned today are included in the episode show notes. Now, if you love this conversation as much as I did, please share your thoughts by leaving a review. And if you'd like to receive weekly installments of Cast Away delivered straight to your phone, hit the subscribe button. Until next time, that's it from me. Take care.